I invite Aiden and Michael to come up.
Today, we are going to be talking about thankfulness, and with our host, Aiden Smets.
Tell me, Aiden, what does thankfulness mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is when I'm thankful, I can be grateful for other things, like my family, my friends, and everything.
What's something special that somebody's done, say, to your whole family that you're thankful for?
Well, when we had Ben, we had a lot of people bring food to us.
Ooh. How did you thank those people?
I thanked them by praying for them.
Oh, okay. What's something that somebody did specially for you that you're thankful for?
Well, when I was down, my friend at school, he told me a joke. Tell you what, I was as red as the Red Lobster sign.
And you said something else, he came and had lunch with you?
Yeah.
So that was another way that he came and sat with you because mm-hmm. you were feeling kind of down. Mm-hmm. What did you do because you were thankful to him?
I made him a letter at school and I sent it to him.
Oh, that's nice. You know, I just noticed this morning something I'm often thankful to you for. When we came in, you remember that 2 weeks ago when we were roller skating with the junior MYF, mm-hmm. I fell down and bumped my butt. Mm-hmm. And you asked if it was still sore. Mm-hmm. And it didn't make it any less sore that you asked, but I appreciated it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that one thing you do very well when you're grateful to people is you give good hugs. Can I have one now?
Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The thing that I've most worried about since my complete paralysis in 2005 is becoming bitter. I've seen it happen in others, and it's not a pleasant thing for either the person or people who love them. Several significant mini crises a few years ago made me stop in my tracks and say, "Dear God, it's happening. I'm becoming bitter." It was a loud wake-up call. I had major spiritual and emotional work to do. Here's the focus of that work that's ongoing to this day. There are a number of narratives that could be used to describe my life. One theme or narrative is this: my reality on a daily basis is really hard. Another narrative I could use is: being a single, middle-aged female in a wheelchair equals social isolation. There are other equally negative options. And there is truth in each, meaning that it's very easy for me to find evidence to support each one. And that is my temptation, to look for the supportive evidence around every corner, to list it, obsess about it, lose sleep over it. What I've come to understand in a new way is how doing so actually creates, or at least dramatically perpetuates, a particular reality. As we've already heard from Kathleen, there's solid research showing how the brain is shaped by what the mind focuses on. The ability of the brain to reorganize itself is called neuroplasticity. And here's my understanding of one way that it works. I choose a particular narrative as the core reality of my life. I look for evidence to support that narrative. I find the evidence I'm looking for. It's always easy to find. That evidence more solidly packs the soil on the neural pathway in my brain. I travel its hardened path again and again and again. I had abundant evidence for how well it was working. The more I looked for the evidence, the easier it was to find, and the more it was dragging me down. While there was plenty of truth in what I was reinforcing, I began to see, or more accurately, I looked for and chose to see the much more positive narratives for my life. I have a warm house, plenty of food, and enough income to maintain both. I have involvements that bring meaning to my life. I have a caring community of friends, family, neighbors, and colleagues. I am working constantly to make these the core narratives of my life. And I'm finding all the evidence I need when I choose to look for it. While it's hard to forge new pathways in one's brain, it's oh so very rewarding. It brings a mindful, open-hearted approach to life rather than a narrow negativity. I'm not suggesting a fake Pollyanna view of difficult situations. Life brings hard stuff. I want to be very clear that times of lament, periods of grieving, and stretches of wandering in the wilderness are all critical to our well-being. I've personally done enough of these to bring up Assembly's collective average. It's important to say that I continue to revisit occasionally the old narratives. There's still truth in them, and my laments will never completely cease. What I'm talking about, though, is a lifestyle, a worldview, a general way of being. I intentionally choose to spend less and less time on those old negative paths. The newer, more positive paths become more packed down and easier to navigate the more that I travel them. These paths of gratefulness stimulate my senses more, bring me more joy, and hopefully make me an easier person to be around. I think that's what Philippians 4:8 is all about. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things. There it is, neuroplasticity in the Bible, the brain reorganizing itself, the path of gratefulness.
We'd like to begin with a definition of gratitude from Robert Emmons, the world's leading scientific expert on gratitude. Emmons writes that gratitude has two key components. The first part is an affirmation of goodness. We affirm that there are good things in the world, gifts and benefits that we've received. The second part of gratitude is a recognition that the source of this goodness is outside of ourselves. This is an acknowledgement that other people help us achieve the goodness in our lives.
Emmons goes on to say, and I'm paraphrasing here, that humility is both a key to gratitude and profoundly countercultural. It does not come naturally for most people and is certainly not celebrated in our popular culture, filled with likes and selfies. We are not self-sufficient. We did not create ourselves. We depend on our parents, friends, our pets, God, the universe, and even the government to provide what we cannot provide for ourselves. Seeing with grateful eyes requires that we see the web of interconnection where we alternate between being givers and receivers. The humble person says that life is a gift to be grateful for, not a right to be claimed.
We've also been reading the gratefulness.org website that says, "Grateful living is a way of life, which asks us to notice all that is already present and abundant, from the tiniest things of beauty to the grandest of our blessings, and in so doing, to take nothing for granted. Grateful living is supported by daily practices, tools, habits of mind, and behaviors that can be learned, translated, and applied to many aspects of our lives. It is also nourished in community and relationship." This sparked some questions between us. What were we doing to practice gratitude? Why was this sometimes so difficult?
In an article titled "What Gets in the Way of Gratitude" by Professor Emmons, we're reminded that perhaps the most famous instance of ingratitude in history is found in the New Testament Gospel of Luke. Jesus heals 10 lepers of their physical disease and of their social stigma. Pronounced clean, they get their old lives back. Being brought back from near death, you'd think they'd be overwhelmingly grateful. Yet only one returned to express thanksgiving for being healed. From Luke 17, verse 16 to 18, Jesus asks, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." This parable reminds us of just how common ingratitude is, and how easy it is to take blessings for granted, and how gratitude is dependent upon unmerited favors.
2016 was a difficult year for our family. It included the death of a grandmother and an uncle, close family members in deep personal pain, the early birth of our third child, and resulting NICU stay. All of this was against the backdrop of the world's political and environmental turmoil, which felt louder than ever. We waffled between feelings of grief for painful experiences and overwhelming gratitude for the support that we received. We wanted to nurture those feelings of gratitude and protect ourselves from a slippery slope of dark feelings and ingratitude.
A podcast that Brooke had listened to with Brother David Steindl-Rast kept coming up for us. "Can you be grateful for everything?" he asked. "No, not for everything, but in every moment." Then we listened to his TED Talk, where he said, "It's not happiness that makes us grateful, it's gratefulness that makes us happy." We decided to make weekly artworks based on gratitude to help us stay alert to ways we could be thankful despite the conditions. Brooke would make a weekly painting, and I would create a weekly piece of pottery, both inspired by gratitude. Our goal was to cultivate gratefulness in a way that clearly acknowledged difficulty and simultaneously allowed beauty. We plan to post our weekly work on social media with the hashtag Rothschenk Gratitude Project, and to write monthly updates on our progress to help ourselves stay accountable.
Collaboration with each other encouraged a supportive dialogue. It was fun to see when our gratitude thoughts overlapped, when we surprised each other with what we saw, and when one of us needed help feeling thankful. It was a reminder to connect with each other over more than the practicalities of work and family life. We hoped it would inspire us to slow our pace and to learn to view our everyday lives differently as a gift. It felt good to be grateful, even when it wasn't easy. Additionally, we had accepted that if we were not intentionally choosing gratitude, by default we were choosing ingratitude.
At the culmination of that year, Brooke's collection of 52 weekly paintings were published in a book, Tiny Gratitudes, complete with written reflections from the year. Half of the pieces that I made from a collection of more than 100 tableware objects will be gifted, along with a copy of Brooke's book, to people who inspired our gratitude over the course of the year. We'll begin the gifting of these symbols of gratitude in January of 2019. After this year of intentional gratitude practice, we're feeling compelled to continue a regular practice of awareness in our lives and in our artwork. Searching for and embracing gratitude has become a long-term life goal for us. Recognizing this has inspired us to plan another year-long practice, including gratitude, but focusing on intentions that we set each month. We plan again to create regular artworks about these intentional themes as they relate to our weekly experiences and challenges. We want to weave a more deliberate pattern of intention into our daily lives.
We hope by setting an intention to be present in life with a positive attitude, to consider humor as a response to failure, and to help ourselves approach challenges bravely and authentically.
Parenting challenges, politics, our damaged environment, and hurting relationships can seem insurmountable. We're living in a time that often feels heavy. Obstacles in our daily lives can present overwhelming challenges. We recognize that our response and contributions matter. We want to meet these challenges by showing up. Being present together is how we begin.
Author, feminist, and social justice activist L.R. Nost says, "Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break, and all things can be mended, not with time, as they say, but with intention. So go, love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you."